if you look in Europe as well, the nations with the most, with the highest electricity prices are the ones that have the most wind and solar. So it's not cheaper. So the first one is cost. The second one is blackouts, as we've talked about. We're going to see more of those. The third impact of the green breakdown is a reduction of personal choice, if you will, forced adoption of electric, forced adoption of appliances. And then the last I call transnational energy shocks, like we've seen in Europe in the last 2 years.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I am your host, Carrie Lutz. Happy 2024. Hey, it's been chilly here in Florida. If the climate's getting warmer, they didn't tell us about it. Hey, the good news is that with a stroke of the magic wand, pretty soon you will be driving an EV, whether you want to or not. Well, Steve Gore is here with us now. Steve, a noted EV and just noted skeptic, shall we say, about climate and all other things. Steve, great to have you back on the show. So what is going on here with our president and climate change and getting rid of gasoline-powered vehicles, getting rid of coal-fired power plants? Are we just going to live like in a nuclear desert?
Well, we just had COP28. Great to join you, Carrie. Happy New Year. We just had COP28 about a month ago, the 28th conference of the parties. 80,000 people came to Dubai, United Arab Emirates. And just about all of those folks flew in. Not too many people live in the UAE. with their private jets and their commercial aircraft. For each pound of jet fuel you burn, you emit 3 pounds of carbon dioxide. And so COP28, the United Nations Climate Conference, was literally the biggest carbon dioxide emitting event of the year.
Well, that's nice to know.
But they're really not having much of an effect on either global temperatures or the use of coal, oil, and natural gas fuels, which continue to be about 80% of global energy use.
Oh, man. So what is it they're really doing here? Because, you know, it's like, if you remember, prior to World War I, European governments passed a law outlawing war. And we all know how well that worked out. Is this kind of the same thing here?
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy. The folks there want to get rid of coal, oil, and natural gas. Fatih Birol, the executive director of the International Energy Agency, said in May 2021, if governments are serious about the climate crisis, there can be no new investments in oil, gas, and coal from this year. And the delegates at COP28 actually signed a agreement saying that they would phase out coal, oil, and natural gas, so-called fossil fuels. Our climate envoy, John Kerry, actually called for an elimination of all coal-fired power plants around the world. There are about 6,500 coal-fired power units in the world today. About 1,000 are in planning or in building. And it's just a remarkable statement, very callous. It reminds me of Marie Antoinette saying, "I'll let them eat cake, the poor people." 35% of the world's electricity today is generated by coal-fired power plants. And yet we have a shortage of electricity around the world. We have about 700 million people that don't have access to electricity, and another 2 billion that have blackouts or brownouts every day or every other day. And if we were eliminate all the coal-fired power plants, these folks just wouldn't have electricity. So it's a crazy statement in many, many ways. The great news is that we're putting scrubbers on plants, and around the world we're eliminating pollution from coal-fired plants. But the idea that we're going to stop the seas from rising if we get rid of all coal-fired power plants, that is a modern superstition.
Well, you know, Steve, when I was a kid, everyone was crying about acid rain coming up coal-fired power plants. So They went and invested hundreds of millions of dollars on these scrubbers. They're really expensive. Yep. So now there's no more yellow coming out, sulfur dioxide. I haven't heard any mention of rain in decades. Now they said they moved the goalposts and said, you got to get rid of the carbon dioxide, which you and I both know is impossible.
Yeah, it really is impossible. But one thing about acid rain, they hit all these lakes in the eastern United States and in Europe and places, and they said this was due to sulfur dioxide coming out of our power plants. But after we basically eliminated it in the United States, it's saw more than 70 or 80%, they found that the acidity of the lakes really didn't change. It was due to other natural factors. But you're right, the world's on a quest to get to net zero by 2050, at least the wealthy part of the world, the United States, Europe, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and a few other nations. That is beyond a reach-out goal. That's an impossible dream. We emit carbon dioxide in everything we do. It is not going to be something that's eliminated, and that's why my book, Green Breakdown, says that this push for renewable energy, this push for net zero, is going to break down over the next decade or two, and people are going to get back to demanding low-cost, reliable energy and reducing real pollution, but not carbon dioxide.
All right. So it just amazes me how naive people are, because, you know, when we don't have electric in the midst of a huge snowstorm or a heat wave, people die, don't they?
They do. They do, yeah. It can be very serious, and particularly we've seen it in the February 2021 disaster in Texas, when four and a half or 5 million people did not have electricity for 3 days. We had somewhere between 200 and 700 people die during that thing. That's much more than a major hurricane. And, you know, we seem to be on a trend to make everything electric. We're going to make our cars electric, and we're going to make our cooking electric. So if the power goes off, not only your lights are going to be out, but you won't be able to drive your car, you won't be able to cook your food. And we are trending towards a weakening electric grid. Data from the U.S. Department of Energy says that back in about 10 years ago, 2013-14, we had an average outage of about 3.5 hours a year for each electrical user. But now that's up to 6, 7, or 8 hours a year over the last 3 years. So we've more than doubled the average outage time. I'm talking about a cumulative outage for the year. And it's going to get worse and worse as we put in more intermittent wind and solar.
So what are they thinking?
Well, people are going to learn the hard way, unfortunately. And there's papers coming out of our electricity industry all the time saying that we're going to have problems in the next year or two. In Texas this last year, they didn't have outages, but they issued 10 electricity shortage alerts in August and September. They said, don't plug in your electric vehicle. Don't run your air conditioner. We don't have enough electricity. And that is really the wrong trend. Mm-hmm. And the more we push these renewables, the more problems we're going to have.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, I'm a big electric car person, but not for any of the perceived environmental benefits or whatever. I think in the case of Tesla, they've effectively built a better mousetrap. The car, really, driving experience, technology, safety is just superior to normal car in every way. And except
maybe
except range. All right, there's issues with range, but not as much with a Tesla as with other cars. And what else? I don't know.
Well, Tesla's been amazing. They have really cool, fast cars, and we've had tremendous advances in lithium-ion batteries enabling it. But there are still some issues. Cold weather in the north is a problem. If you get down to about 10 degrees Fahrenheit, you have to have a heated garage to charge your car.
Yeah.
Insurance is an issue, too. The figures say, I think, that electric car users pay about 70% more for insurance than
That's
a internal combustion engine car.
So it's still there.
It still is kind of a upper-class mm-hmm. kind of a thing. And as it comes down, it'll penetrate markets more and more. But right now, the market's having a little bit of a problem. There's a lot of the inventories are way up about 300% for Ford and GM. Mm-hmm. They have decided to slow down some models. And hey, I'm not anti-electric vehicle. I just don't think governments ought to be forcing everybody to get it.
Exactly, on the path
we're headed for. Let's let the market take its path, and eventually we'll get there.
It's the way to go. If it makes sense,
right?
Yeah, I mean, hey, I love it, but forget it. When it comes to like cost of repairs, it's double. The insurance is 50% higher.
Well,
so whatever I save in energy costs for gasoline, it's made up for in those other things. Plus, you got like subscription fees and stuff that you don't have in a regular car. But look, hey, you know that that these people don't care about that. I will also mention that the that the idea that you could just mandate these things and everybody's going to go just doesn't happen. But the reason why Ford, GM, and Audi and others are failing is because, look, it still is a cutting-edge technology product. Nobody wants to be on the bleeding edge of technology in order to make people give up their current thing, which is working fine in their opinion, in your opinion. Then you've got to add some amazing benefits. No other car company but Tesla does that. Perhaps BYD will follow them up, but Tesla is doing it. Otherwise, these cars are really inferior to what these companies are offering now, and that's why they're failing in terms of weather, in terms of overall driving experience.
Tesla's still way ahead, no doubt about that. And another big thing with this electricity is to put all these EVs on the road, we have to get our grid power cranked up. And they're also talking about getting rid of gas-powered stoves, gas appliances. And according to a study by the New England Independent System Operator, that takes as much electricity as well as adding electric cars. So there's really going to be a big demand. And at the same time, we're going to shut down all the coal plants and a lot of the nuclear plants. we're really going in the wrong direction in many ways.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, but, you know, in the end, what's going to sink this is it's just not affordable, right?
Well, there's four impacts, I think, of the breakdown. One is electric prices, and I often show a chart when I present that shows the top 12 wind states in the United States,
mm-hmm.
and eight of those 12 states have prices that are rising faster than the national average because you have to back up the wind systems, and you also have to build transmission out to remote areas. California is an example as well. California's electricity rates are double any Western state right now, green California, and they're going to go much, much higher. If you look in Europe as well, the nations with the highest electricity prices are the ones that have the most wind and solar. So it's not cheaper. So the first one is cost. The second one is blackouts, as we've talked about. We're going to see more of those. The third impact of the green breakdown is a reduction of personal choice, if you will, forced adoption of electric, forced adoption of appliances. And then the last I call transnational energy shocks, like we've seen in Europe in the last 2 years. Their electricity prices are up three times as high as they were 3 years ago, and their natural gas prices up 2.5 times. And so they've had a real problem. They've had a drop in standard of living in Europe. They've told people in England to stop bathing to save energy, or to shower with a friend. but it's kind of sad. They have people putting up a newspaper on the inside of their windows to try and insulate their houses because they're getting energy bills that are the £2,000 over the winter. I mean, they're very, very expensive. So and a lot of this is based on the big push for renewables. So these things are going to force people to get back to what's sensible. And in any case, they're not going to have a measurable effect on the climate, which is dominated by natural factors, not what we're doing with our cars and our industry.
Right. Could not agree with you more. All right. So eventually, though, we're going to understand that that these things, it's just not affordable. We can't do it, can we?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very, very tough. Another answer, batteries are not the answer as well. They're talking about grid-scale batteries for a lot of this stuff. But if you look at the cost of batteries, to back up a wind system for a whole day, the batteries to do that require five times as much as the wind system itself. And then they only last half as long. So you're really talking a 10-to-1 factor, 10 times as expensive as the wind or solar system is the cost of the batteries. So that's not going to work very well. By the way, we got another little issue, too, with these lithium batteries. You know what the biggest cause of fires is in New York City right now?
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, the e-bikes are blowing up.
E-bike batteries. Yeah, they've had a couple hundred fires in the last couple of years and a lot of people injured. And this is happening all over the world, Australia, many other major cities. These lithium batteries have this bad side effect. By the way, if a car catches on fire now in Europe, what they're doing is they pick up an EV that's on fire and they try and put it into a big tank of water. Because they can't put it off any other way. So we need to get, you know, we need to get the improvements going along. We need to get better safety and a lot of other things.
Honestly, totally do. And yeah, so what's it going to take for the world to come to its collective senses here other than people dying, which they don't seem to care about at all?
Yeah, no, I predicted this breakdown 10 years in a row in the future, but we're starting to see some of this already. If you look off the East Coast, about half of the wind systems have pulled out to put wind systems off the East Coast along New Jersey and Massachusetts, New York. They can't afford the cost of doing it at the prices that they quoted. England, they just did an auction for onshore wind and they had no bidders. So they got to raise the prices they're going to allow them to generate electricity at. Siemens Wind just got bailed out in Germany. 10 billion euros was the bailout from the German government because their system was failing. We have, as we talked about, the EV breakdown a little bit. And then the electric, the renewable energy companies their stocks have been falling for the last 3 years now. You can go look at the RENIX index, RENIXX, and that's been down for the last 3 years. So we're starting to see a problem with these renewable systems, despite the fact that governments are pushing them so heavily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, but it doesn't seem like the people of the world catching on to this, Steve. If you're a homeowner, automobile owner, whatever business, are they waking up to this reality?
Slowly, I think. Not real fast right now. We still have many places saying they're going green, but we're going to see more and more problems. One of the things that's occurring though is putting up all this wind and solar requires vast amounts of land. And we're starting to see this being opposed in places like Michigan and Ohio and other places. People don't want to pay for it. They don't want the land to be taken up by these systems. Robert Bryce tracks these rejections of renewable systems, and it's been rising quite a bit over the last few years. So it's getting tougher and tougher for these things to be deployed, and the goal of 50, 80, or 100% renewable is far, far out of reach.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so maybe the world is going to come to its senses. Hey, we want to read your work. We want to find out more about you, Steve. Where do you go to get the latest from Steve?
Right. So my books, The Mad, Mad, Mad World of Climatism, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. I think you get signed copies of those from my website, Steve Gorham, GOREHAM.com. They're also on Amazon, and there are ebooks available as well. As a matter of fact, Green Breakdown was number one in the energy policy category last week. It jumps up and down, but it's doing pretty well. So if people are worried about that solar farm next to them or that wind system in the next county or losing their gas stove or their gasoline car, they really should read this book and push back on their leaders.
All right. Well, that's a good thing. Hey, if you got a question for Steve, myself, kl@carrylutz.com. The link to Steve's site is on our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Go there, click that link. While you're there, subscribe to our newsletter. Steve, always a pleasure. Thanks for stopping by.
Until next time, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Cary Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.